All right. 1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2, 3, 4. That looks good right there. And Stuart, why don't you say 1, 2, 3, 4?
1, 2, 3, 4. Checkpoint. Checky.
Once again.
1, 2, 3, 4. That's good. Checkpoint. Checky.
There we go. All right. So,
all right.
Now, Stuart, before we have about 40 seconds until your show starts. Would you like me to open with some sort of tune?
Yes,
that I can
absolutely
easily acquire, and what would that be?
Well, we're feeling a little mellow this morning.
Okay,
a little angry and mellow.
Oh, mellow anger.
Mellow anger.
Mm.
So I'm thinking something like "Carolina on My Mind."
Carolina on My Mind,
and you could do.
Like James Taylor, Carolina, or
Or Alison Krauss, because this is the blues of the blues of the Blue Ridge. And Alison Krauss did a great version with Jerry Douglas.
And I have that right here.
Right.
And that is what we're
That's
what we're going to play.
This is the kind of show y'all can expect today now.
Something soft and kind.
Good morning, good morning, good morning. This is Stuart Acuff with Resistance Radio on enlightenedradio.org, www.enlightenedradio.org. Here this morning with my great friend and leader, John Case, the president, CEO, CFO.
Yes.
CEO and CFO, chairman of the board. Founder of enlightenedradio.org.
Man, if I don't get a check in the mail after that introduction.
Lord have mercy. I've gotten better with less.
I know you have. I know you have, Stuart. Anyway.
There's some days I thought, well, the only thing I'm going to get today is that nice introduction.
That's right. And the rest of the day would be beans, beans, and more beans.
Right. You know, beans and cornbread, beans and cornbread. If right. It's crackling bread and they put a little pork rind, hog skin, right. Fried hog skin in that, in those beans, then it'd be all right.
Yeah, well, that's...
Or in that cornbread, it'd be all right.
I love cornbread. You know, yesterday, so now you should have seen me and Rooster.
Real
you know,
Rooster. Cornbread is real good.
Oh, most I love people it. Do you like it what... sweeter, though?
No.
My grandma used to put some kind of honey in her cornbread, and it came out... I liked it that way, man. I mean, it was approaching somewhere between cornbread and pound cake.
Well, yeah. Well, y'all were Kansans. I'm from a family of Tennessee.
No, this is my grandmother from West Virginia. West Virginia. Now, she's from, I guess Wheeling was the last West Virginia address she had.
That's but, West Virginia.
You know, and she was born somewhere around Dorothy.
And as we know, West Virginia. Now, I can get an argument about this. I've gotten several arguments about this. But as we know by now, West Virginia is the rural South. Everybody in West Virginia don't want to acknowledge that, but we talk like the rural South.
Well, look, I want to tell you that, have you met Jim Surkamp? You probably met
him.
Yes,
I have.
You know, well,
Jim has done
a lot of research on exactly the attitude toward that question as it went back into Jefferson and Berkeley County history, especially Jefferson County, okay, which, you know, there was quite a bit of plantation economy in the southern part of this county,
I'm sure
okay?
There was, man.
Some of them families that are still on the county commission, the Tabs, right? Okay, I mean, things like that go way back.
What's that family that has so much power around here, real right wingers?
Which one?
They're in politics.
Oh, you mean? Household. Well, he's the leader of ALEC statewide.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
I don't know that his personal base goes much beyond, but he's clearly behind this freedom group here, or he's one of them anyway. And and they are wreaking havoc. I call them the Three Stooges on the county commission. I never met three more stupid people running for office than.
The ALEC guys?
That's kind of what they are. This guy, Onesco, he's going to conduct an audit, going to pay a fortune for an audit of a operation that gets audited every year. And there's never been a problem with it. I mean, it's just, you know, just because he wants his taxes lowered.
Right.
That's all it is.
Right.
And he's got these two idiots with him that, one guy, I'm an accountant.
Yeah.
And?
Yeah. Why don't you do the audit for free?
Yeah, why don't you do it for free? It's a public service.
You're an accountant. Yeah. Hey, John, I got to talk a little bit about healthcare.
I know.
John's going to be co-hosting and co-guesting with me. We're going to be host and guest.
All right, why don't you lead off on it? Because you've been, you know, on the line.
If you're into the resistance, this is the place to be this morning. Because the most important vote in the United States right now is how our Republican Senator, Shelley Moore Capito, votes on the Republican death care and money to the rich bill. And she made the wrong decision twice yesterday. She voted for the motion to proceed and allow debate and ultimately a vote on the bill, which there wasn't a bill. There was a number and a reference to the code where it would appear in the U.S. code. But there wasn't any language. There wasn't a bill. And then she voted last night for the original Better Care Reconciliation Act, BCRA. That's the bill that they defeated, that McConnell could not get enough votes for 2 weeks ago, and so he didn't put it up for a vote. So she's voted twice wrong. Yesterday.
What was the result of the second vote?
The second vote was defeated 57-43.
Well, that's a pretty good margin. Okay.
Yeah, it's all a good margin.
She voted for it?
She voted for it.
She's scum.
Yeah,
I'm sorry. She's just scum.
Yeah. She's totally.
You know, I mean, that's like.
That's a 14 vote margin. And yeah. She was on the wrong side. It's not like it was one or two votes.
Well, you know, you might be able.
But we can't give up on her, John. We can't give up on her because she has gone back and forth so much trying to appeal to both sides. Say one thing this week and another thing that week. We had a commitment from her last week.
She lied.
6 days ago.
I'm not sure the vote to proceed would have been a technical lie, but the vote on that bill that you just described, that's a lie.
That's a lie. Right.
You know.
When she told us that she would not vote for anything that cut health care to West Virginia.
And she did.
And she did.
Right. So, I think you got to still work on her, but I think, we have to, I'll just say what I have a short thought on this, okay? She had an opportunity, especially on the vote to proceed, to kill the whole possible threat of harm to West Virginians.
Right.
If she had said no to that, it would not have proceeded. I don't believe. I think they would not have had the votes. And that would be the end of the current threat to everybody that's on Medicaid in West Virginia, plus all the damage that's going to be done to the plans, if any, survive in the exchanges as well. Right. So, that was an opportunity she had to fulfill what she promised. She chose not to.
Right.
And which means, of course, that Mr. McConnell owns her. Mm-hmm. And the Republican Party, whatever its crash course, its submission to fascism, its submission to every other possible evil that could come down the road, she's on board with it because they own her. And because I can't foresee her doing what she did unless they do own her. Okay, it doesn't make any sense to me. Even I know there was some right-wing pressure on her coming the other direction as well.
Sure.
We're going to run people against you. We're going to do this, blah, 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 blah. But hey, you know, your public statement word is your word. And if you, if you back out and lie on that, you'll lie on anything. It doesn't matter. You're owned. They got you. Right. And so that's what we have. We have a senator that's owned by interests out of the state that have no interest whatsoever in this state, certainly in its people. And that raises a question to me about whether this democracy is so corrupt that it can't be fixed.
Well, just to stay on healthcare for a bit before we go into the more existential question. Let me just say that the reason today this radio show is so important is because we are in the Eastern Panhandle, and the resistance groups in the Eastern Panhandle, mainly Women's March, West Virginia Women's March, indivisible group called Vigilance, the Coalition for Democracy, Sammy Brown and her operation, and the Berkeley County NAACP, which our friend Dr. Zaki McGill runs, have been more active on Shelley Moore Capito than anybody else in the state of West Virginia. We've had more actions, more demonstrations, moved more people. And we weren't getting press for a while, in part because people, I mean, these are grassroots folks, and so there wasn't anybody who had any press experience. So we were able to mend that, and the other day we got two TV stations. We've broken through in the Journal. We'd already broken through in the Chronicle. So we've just been out front in the resistance movement, particularly on this, quote, healthcare bill, which is not a healthcare bill. It is a way to fund the tax abatements, the tax decreases, the tax cuts for only the wealthiest amongst us. So I saw a figure this morning in sort of the debrief about what to do about Capito that showed that there are 24 West Virginians, 24, John, 2-4 West Virginians who get their health care cut for every billionaire who gets his taxes cut. And all of those millionaires live in New York and Washington. They don't live in West Virginia. There's a handful that do. There's a handful. I believe this is the first net loss of federal dollars for West Virginia in history since there's been a West Virginia.
Wow.
Because for decades, more federal money came into the state than went out of the state. But if this bill passes that they call health care, and it's wealth care or death care, it ain't health care. If this bill passes, this will be the first time there's been a greater net loss of federal dollars than gain. That's sad irony. One of the poorest states in the union.
Well, we are.
And our senator voted to let that happen.
Right. She's scum.
Yes.
I'm sorry. I was going to try to defer. When you told me voting to proceed when she could have killed it right there is bad enough.
Right.
But, you know, because there's no proposal that the GOP is considering that has any health care in it.
Right.
Every one of them is arguing between whether they're going to throw 22, 25, or 33 million people off of health care.
Right.
I mean, that's the only, there's no other proposals that they're going to be considering. So right. To vote to proceed on that is a vote to proceed on a bad outcome.
Well, two bad outcomes. Number one is you lose all of the Medicaid expansion. Number two, John, they changed the funding formula for Medicaid. So we would lose much of the traditional Medicaid funding because they would put a statewide cap. So it wouldn't be whatever you need to get well. It would be whatever you need until we hit the cap.
You know, this whole discussion is somehow echoing a Jerry Brown moment for me. Okay.
All right. Now John's getting to his happy place.
So see, now Jerry, now you remember like what, 10 years ago or maybe 15, whenever. When was the last time Pete Wilson was governor of California?
Oh, it's been longer than that. You had to go.
When did Jerry come in? Jerry came in. This is his second term, right?
Yes, it is his second term.
8 years ago. Who was the last
Democratic governor?
Well,
Gray. Gray was the last.
Before the
Terminator.
Schwarzenegger. Schwarzenegger was okay. Okay. Yeah. So, they had a terrible crisis in California based on all these right-wing things going on 20 years about the tax initiatives, right? And all these stupid initiatives.
Prop 13.
Term limits and everything else. Basically just took the legislature and eviscerated its ability to govern, right? And of course they had, you know, finally after the Republicans started to lose an election and Brown came in after Schwarzenegger, who was not the worst of the Republicans by any means. You know?
Schwarzenegger for a Republican was quite good,
you know,
but he was a Republican.
Well, yeah. And so he wasn't going to do anything about the stupid tax problem. I heard that he actually attempted it, but he couldn't get anywhere with his own party, so it was over, right?
Right.
So anyway, in comes Jerry, and he now has a democratically led legislature as well.
You bet.
But they won't do it. They won't do what has to be done. They won't turn it around and revoke those
referenda.
The referenda bullshit, you know?
Yeah.
And so he says, okay. He goes to the Republicans. What do you want? Well, he's governor, right? Goes to them, what do you want? Well, you know, if you don't mind me decoding it for a minute, the Republicans said, well, we'd like to screw labor and the environment. And we'd like to screw.
Right.
We'd have to get rid of any affirmative action or equality remedies or anything like that, you know?
Right.
And he says, and of course, they come back with proposals to cut all the things that would, you know, help those constituencies, right? And Brown says, fine, go ahead. You know, no, but the Democrats have no other proposal. You know, and so it comes through. And now everybody is really pissed off. Because now everyone's starts to lose some skin, right? Everywhere.
Right.
And they all start screaming, and half of them are mad at Brown, you know. Right. So then Brown puts his own referendum out there, right? Uh-huh. Which sidetracks his own majority in the legislature, or parts of them that wouldn't go along with it, right?
Right.
And it passes overwhelmingly. Now, you think about that. You know, that's what I remember. There was a commentary. They asked Barack Obama about that in the article. They were, I think it was called Inside Business. It was summarizing Brown's, you know, Buddhist approach to politics, right?
You know?
And they asked Obama about what he thought about that. He says, "Well, he's a master of the deep game."
Yeah.
Now,
he is.
In some ways, you know, maybe that's where we're at. Okay, you know, it's a very dialectical, if I can use a fancy old-time word, kind of deal about how, you know, opposites tend to work, right? Or how, you know, opposing tendencies work. And sometimes, you know, the media, the fake news, the BS, who to believe, I don't know any, you know, who do you know? All that, you know, if you can't find reason somewhere in there that satisfies your own experience, maybe, you know, the friggin' pancake has got to land on you sometime. Oh, that's what's going on.
Well, the pancake.
I don't know.
A bunch of them pancakes has already landed.
Well, I think we.
Not enough yet, but a bunch of them.
But you got to have a way to, you know, thread the needle, so to speak, here and find the, you know, the kind of different centers of resistance that are going to be enough to turn the center nationally, right? Basically. I think we're headed there. I wonder about ways in which we can or will be compelled to deepen
the kinds of organizations and movements that we have in our communities, because we're talking about it here, for example, healthcare taking a big dive, and you're gonna lose services. That means the heroin addicts and the poor are gonna be sick in your community.
Right. And die.
That's what it means. And creating a lot of social problems in the midst of it, okay?
Yep.
I'll tell you right now, before I die of starvation, I'm going to go rob a convenience store. I will. Okay? I just want you to know that, okay? And if I'm an addict, rather than go through withdrawal, I might put a bullet in your head, you know, to get a pound of cheese.
Right.
Okay, I mean that. I just want you to know that might happen. Okay,
right.
And
but meanwhile, John.
Meanwhile,
we still got to work on her vote.
Yeah.
Right. So we will be at her office more and more. I predict that those decisions haven't been made yet, but I guarantee you that. We met on them last night and into the night, and we've had discussions, email discussions this morning about next steps, and there's going to be next steps.
Is there any way we can inquire the head count of the deaths from opioid abuse, since that's
sure,
her big saving thing?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, we can get that.
Why don't we change the signs in front of her building to... accessories to murders, current count, blah, blah.
Right.
Okay.
That's a great idea.
Something like that, you know.
Yeah.
Accessory to murder.
I will say this, that when we first started doing demonstrations at her building, where her Martinsburg office is, 300 Foxcroft Avenue, will be there on Saturday from 2 to 3. So please come out, join us at 300 Foxcroft Avenue demonstration at Shelley Moore Capito's office building. But when's this
going to be?
This Saturday.
Okay.
That's the first next step. But when we first started doing sign waving and rallies at her office, if we got a response from passing cars, it was negative. You know, thumbs down, get the middle finger, whatever it is. From the occasional Trump person. Yesterday, when we were out there, it was at least 5-1 with us.
Okay. So the message is getting out a little bit. Yeah.
Good. People are figuring out what this is about.
Right.
And I don't think she realizes how much heat she's going to get behind this thing. And it's not
really?
The kind of thing I want to say to her. Yeah, I do. I don't. I want to say to her, Shelley, this is not one of those things that goes away. You know, I know a lady has four kids. All five of them have mental illness. They are all five on Medicaid. She is literally frightened to death. Her children are threatened by her own United States senator. I mean, and that, I think, is how it's going to hit home. I'll bet you every family in West Virginia is affected. A relative, a friend, a cousin is an addict, an alcoholic, has a chronic disease, heart disease, diabetes, something. Every family at some point, somewhere in the family tree, is affected by this vote that Shelley Moore Capito did wrong yesterday, both these votes. So now, all week, and we don't know how long this will go, but I predict it'll go at least all week into next week, McConnell is going to have the floor open for debate, and we're going to see a lot of proposals come forward. First, they got to get a bill on the table that they can add amendments to or take amendments away. And we don't know which bill that's going to be. Hopefully, it's not repeal then replace, which is the most dangerous bill that could pass.
All of them are terrible. If any of them pass, it's a disaster. Right. I mean, you're starting to compare, lose 60 million uninsured to 50. Okay, but it doesn't matter. It's an unmitigated defeat.
The problem with the repeal now, replace later, is whether they would replace anything.
Well, they won't. They won't.
Yeah.
I'm sure they won't. But I'm not sure maintaining a system that is, I'm not sure it's sustainable. I don't think it is, actually, without Medicaid and without subsidies in the marketplace, which neither of which they want to do. Okay?
Right.
So, without those two things, it's meaningless, frankly.
Oh, well, you're right. Absolutely. Neither of which they want to do, because that's where the money comes from for the lowering taxes on the wealthy,
right,
which is what this is really all about and why they would sacrifice American. This is not just about ideology.
Ideology. Money drives it. I mean, you figure you want to cut taxes. You don't want to pay them. And you put together all the ingredients of that campaign. It doesn't matter how.
About ideology for some of them. It's about ideology for Paul Ryan.
But he's not even there are some people who actually believe, that the big corporations should run the world.
Right.
Okay?
Yeah.
And some of them are very upfront about that. I mean, they act like nobody else can zip their pants up.
American enterprises.
Right. I mean, big time. Who needs democracy? I mean, the corporate things are doing fine. The fact that it's complete horseshit doesn't seem to bother these guys. Yeah. I mean, it's not horseshit for them. What do I care? I don't want to pay for your health care. I don't want to pay for your fire department either. I could care less if your house burns down.
But if you're within a stone's throw of Enlightened Radio Studios in the Four Seasons bookstore, above the Four Seasons bookstore
in Shepherdstown,
downtown, beautiful downtown Shepherdstown, you can be proud of the people who represent you in the resistance, the Eastern Panhandle Resistance movement.
And get bigger. We got to get bigger.
To get bigger.
You have some poetry.
So join us Saturday.
In front of Senator Capito's Capito's office there. And what's the address? 300
Foxcroft Avenue, right. Martinsburg, West Virginia.
Okay. And what time?
2 o'clock, from 2 to 3 on Saturday. Be there.
Okay. Now, I understand you got some poems, brother.
Yeah.
Are you waiting to play a song first, or do you want to do poems?
Let's play a song. You know, can you find that album, Four Way Street by Crosby, Stills, Nash?
I can't. What do you want to hear on there?
I haven't heard that album. Oh, play Cowgirl in the Sand. I haven't heard that album in such a long time.
Uncle Neil.
And some of our friends and neighbors have maybe are not familiar with this song because they never released it as a single. But this is one of the best songs Neil Young ever wrote and one of the best songs Crosby, Stills, Nash, and Young ever recorded.
Okay, I got that.
Cowgirl in the Sand.
I'm getting there.
Who knows what it's about? I mean, it was
there was
Neil's
a lot of
psychedelic days.
You know, there's a lot of hippie love back then,
right?
Come on, cowgirl.
Hello,
there we go.
Cowgirl
in the sand.
Is this place at your command?
There you go.
Can I see you for a while?
There you go.
Can I see your sweet, sweet smile? Your neighbors, ladies and gentlemen, brothers and sisters. Here we go. Brother Neil.
Change your name. It's the woman in you that makes you want to play this game.
Awesome, awesome. What a great song.
That's a great version of it, too.
Yeah.
From Four Way Street, you know.
Yeah.
You know, the way he has got his guitar amp, his acoustic guitar amped there is a little bit like JT had it the other day. It comes on real strong in the audio, right? You know, so it's really good, right? It's like you're in the same room with him or something.
Yeah. And, when he needs a little power, he's able to get it.
Well, yeah, I mean, that really...
When he bangs the strings, they respond. And that big body.
Yeah. But you know, it takes a... You got to have a good sound man to get the right amplification out of acoustic instruments, you know.
Oh, no doubt.
It's no easy doubt. With electric because they kind of provide, you know, the pure signal themselves, you know.
Right.
But a little, you know, you got to have a microphone has to be... catching the actual thing through the air.
Unless you've got that big hollow body.
Even so, though, the air, you know, the air, that when the string is vibrating, okay? When it's an electric guitar, the vibration, just the vibration electrically generates its own impulse. But when it's not, when it's acoustic, it's the sound wave actually going against the microphone. It's a little different.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's very interesting, John. That's why my children and me say you're the smartest guy in the world.
Hell yeah, sure. Right.
That's what we say, my kids.
I'm right after the fifth dumbest. Okay, so I was like,
my kids and I have had vacation at John's house several times, and
you can't judge by my, you know, I'm still beating myself over the head about not taking Trump as seriously as I did. I feel
as I said to you earlier today. God, is there no signal in here? I can't get my.
Really? You're not coming up with your.
Can you play another song?
Yeah, I can. See if it's out. See if.
Just play one off.
All right, we'll do another four-way street thing here. I think so. Let's see. Four-way street live. There we go. Yeah, Carry On. There we go. Street, yes, Carry On, yes, right there, and get
I got bad news.
Well, what happened?
I can't get to my Facebook page, and that's where my,
you know, I record. I
now, composed. But you said you just got it on your friend's page.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
But I couldn't pull up the whole poem. I just got a snippet.
That's weird. That's not good.
No, it's not good at all.
It could be. You got to get yourself a computer, buddy.
I know.
So you can just, you don't have to rely, you know, phones are a little more fragile.
Well, part of it is, you know, I'm on cellular, right?
Yes.
Right? So I've been on cellular as long as I've had a phone, right?
Yes.
Because I can't hook into...
I can't hook into, what do they call them?
Wireless things?
You're going to be, you and I are going to be in the same retirement home. And you're going to be saying you can't connect electronically. And I'm going to be saying, no, I'm not going to do any more walking outside.
That sounds right, John. That sounds really right. Absolutely. But I don't, it's weird.
But when I was in the 60s, one of my ambitions, like when I was briefly the president of SDS, was that I said, well, I hope when there's a retirement for revolutionaries, they have some kind of nice home on the beach someplace where I can don't have to think about all this garbage, you know. I don't know how I got addicted to it, but anyway, I focus on my, you know,
poetry or something like
right.
that.
Right. Well, yeah. I'm kind of doing that.
Well, you are, but you've found a way to marry these various matters, yeah, I don't know. I always feel like I approach the train track and I'm wondering whether I should just sit on it. Instead of finish the poem.
Let me just assure you, you shouldn't sit on the train track. I went through a little phase like that recently.
I mean, the train track of poetic inspiration, but maybe right. I was talking about something else.
Well, yeah. You know, John, if I could give you some advice, one poet to another.
I think you should, yes.
You know, write until you run out of juice and then end it.
Okay. And okay, I don't have to be like, you know, now Janet, you know, she waits around a little bit for the closing line. Okay. Now, it never comes to me first.
No.
Never. But to her, it does. A lot of the time, she says.
The closing line comes first?
She gets a line or an image, and then she wants to say, okay, I'll put together a poem that goes to that spot or that place or that thing, you know. She does that. Not every time, but she says she does that a lot. And but, you know, it never comes to me that way at all.
Never.
Yeah, so.
It always comes to me... with a first line.
Yeah.
And I have a commitment that if I get the first line, I have to write the poem. And if I get the first two lines, I have to stop whatever I'm doing and write it right then. Because yes. I can carry the first line in my brain until I get to a pen and paper, but I can't carry two lines.
I know, you'll forget it. Yeah.
And right. And if I get that much, then it's going to be a poem. And if it's going to be a poem, you got to write it.
All right. Well, read us one, man.
Well, as soon as I can find
one. You're still doing it.
I'm still looking for it on my Facebook, on my phone. Isn't that terrible?
I know.
I'm glad, I really love this little radio station we have here that you founded and, you know, you're taking care of and you're nannying. I love this radio station. But I respect the people of the Eastern Panhandle immensely. Yep. I respect the people. But I am glad I'm not on the radio in New York City right now trying to find my poem. Oh, I got it.
Okay.
I got it.
Come on, Lord.
All right. Okay. This is the darker one. This is about death. And this has to do with what will happen to people in West Virginia if this horrible monstrosity of a bill passes. I watched death crawl across Mamaw and Savage Dad. Mama's heart torn apart, death took her to be with those gone on. My sister struggled for a heart filled with joy and light denied as death took her too. In the hard heat of Africa, I saw a man beaten and stoned and another flayed. Till death took those two. I helped pull the drowned from the dark of depth. And as a child watched in church as death broke open the holy. Why can I not let go of life for innocence? I know death too well. I have stared in empty sockets. Smelled its breath putrid and poisoned. I know death too well.
How old were you when the first time you saw a dead person?
5. My grandfather had blown his brains out.
And did they have an open or closed casket there?
Closed.
Yeah, okay.
I didn't go to the funeral.
Did you actually see the...
Yeah.
Oh, it was in your house, you mean?
No, it was at the funeral home, but family got to... spend time with
him. Oh, I see. Okay.
Dandy. We called him Dandy.
Right. Right.
And that was the first time I don't put myself different than anybody else. A lot of us are very familiar with death. I never watched a comrade in arms die in a foreign land.
Right.
I heard a guy the other night speaking at my meeting talking. He'd been a Green Beret in Vietnam, and he said there were I think he said 14 guys in his platoon. That's what they do, special forces, small platoons. And three of them or four of them survived Vietnam. Mm-hmm. But, you know, my sister was an invalid and she died young. My mother died relatively young. My mother died about the age I am now.
I'm 62, grandfather in a casket maybe when I was 10. He died in 61 and I was born in 14, so I was 14, 13. Uh-huh. Okay. But other than that, first time I ever saw an actual, you know, real dead person was in Mississippi in 1963.
Oh, really?
I saw the aftermath of a double lynching.
Did you really?
Yep. Outside of Moses, Mississippi.
Oh, my Lord.
A black man and a white woman.
That's horrible.
You know? What happened? I just lost my...
So, John, here is my second point.
About death, okay, is that, yeah. You know, the... we've lost, in some ways, you know, this culture of the respect for the dead, in a way. Mm-hmm. You know, when a member of your community passes, right, and you want to honor them, you want to take the time to do that, it's a fairly solemn thing. And I think it's something probably our culture should pay more and not less attention to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
Because it's a chance to reflect upon, you know, we're here for a time, and perhaps we should find a purpose.
And there is much too nihilism amongst us now. There are too many people who, especially amongst the young and old, you know, the diseases of despair, mm-hmm. suicide, and addiction, right?
Right, right.
And... I know too much about both of those.
All right. Well, let's hear another one.
All right. This has to do with our fight for health care. In the vicissitudes of a violent society, we find ourselves in a fight for what is right against the madness made by he who knows no bounds as he tries to block the light of our lives still lived in hope for love for each other. And the peace of families free of needless worry. This maniacal man mangles any move in a nation now gone wrong. And we bend our lives to the work to defend those we love despite the might of the wicked. And we pledge again today to mend the tears in a nation torn by evil against good.
Remember some time ago, we had a discussion, maybe a year ago, I think it was, I'm guessing a little bit, where we were discussing whether Bernie was right or wrong or whatever to call his movement Our Revolution.
Yes, I do remember.
And at the time, I think I was a little bit divided on the matter, but you tended to think
I was against it.
You were against it, you know.
Right.
Let me say that now that, in this situation, I've decided he was right.
He may well have been right.
And I'm not sure what kind of a move it was in terms of the election itself. But,
the question
substantially, the reforms we're talking about that you and I and him and, you know, 150 million other people are know have to be done starts to look more and more... structural, which means sometimes revolution. If there's a meaning to that word at all, I think maybe it means structural change, you know. So
yeah, it does.
I'm becoming a little more,
brothers and sisters, let me say one thing about structural change, and then I have one more poem. Structural change is when you say labor markets be damned, I'm getting a union and we're getting a raise no matter what the labor market is in this community, because people should not have to live on $7.35 an hour.
Right.
Right.
Or when you say, look, I'm sorry, we can't have slavery anymore.
Right. Labor markets be damned.
Right. And slave family markets be damned, the source of our wealth, okay? And guess what we're going to do? We're going to abolish the job of slave and slave owner, both, okay? So, I mean, that's a structural change,
So this is the third of my three poems written in the last 3 days. Yesterday I wrote two, and I wrote this one, I think, day before yesterday. It is the most craven of cruelties to hold hostage care for a child hurt or sick, for a politics putrid with power, mad with greed gone wrong for so very long. Our country's soul seeps out as everything eclipses the needs of innocence indeed, poor in power or money. What can Trump want? Will our deaths deliver his desperate desires? Why would our president send sickness unto death on all of us? Is there treason worse than the serving of suffering to the innocent?
Whoa, I like the sickness unto death line. That was a little bit of biblical resonance.
I stole that from Soren Kierkegaard. The original existentialist. Right. The Christian existentialist from Denmark.
Yes, and a very interesting writer, actually.
Very interesting writer. A little dense.
Yeah, a bit.
A theologian and a philosopher, Soren Kierkegaard, a great Christian thinker and writer, who proves, unlike some of our listeners, that one can follow Jesus and be smart.
Well, I don't think there's any doubt about that. But you can also follow Jesus and be that can't fix stupid thing.
Most of those folks ain't following Jesus.
Well, I mean, they say they are.
You have to have the pancake experience in order to have the pancake. Or you can just turn to Woody Guthrie.
All right, there you go.
Woody Guthrie said very accurately, there is but one definition of God in the Bible. God is love.
There you go, Amen. Man.
And love is the substance that holds us together in our universality, in our connection with one another, with our interest in the welfare of one another, in our solidarity of our societies, in our care and concern for one another, in our care and concern for the planet, and the other creatures besides our species of the planet. And that's why this healthcare fight is so important. It goes to the very meaning of our government and our society. Is our government designed to prey upon us or to be an instrument of good for us? Is our government designed to prey upon us or to be an instrument of good for us? Well, I would argue that our government was designed to be malleable. And we can decide whether it serves the common good and the interests of the people or whether we allow it to serve the interests of our masters and create more powerful masters.
I'm against the powerful master path.
I am
path,
too, buddy.
Okay, so we're going to have to, we may be called upon to sacrifice on behalf of that. But
Yes.
So be it. We've lived long enough. Yeah. Okay, everybody, are we there?
I think we're there. This is the Rock of Appalachia, the blues of the Blue Ridge. www.enlightenradio.org with Stuart Acuff and John Case with Resistance Radio. See you next Wednesday at 10 a.m. And I promise a guest next Wednesday, someone to talk about what's going on in our country. Thank you. God bless you. God bless the USA. And keep one another.